Let us bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food, glorious food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. You made me laugh, and I needed a laugh this morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was very good, very, very good. So, I don't know where... well, let me say, this all started with my asking for Switzerland Swiss cheese. I thought that was the clearest name, at a deli counter. This is at least a year ago. Deli meaning, you know, the delicatessen department of a supermarket, which sent me on a quest for Swiss cheese. But before I get into what I've learned about Swiss cheese, is I'm going to give you a recipe for a cheese souffle, because I'm really into making cheese souffle now that I've decided it's keto friendly. So it's very friendly. So even though it has flour in it. So here's what happened. If you go up to any counter where they slice cheese and ask for Swiss cheese, you will not get a cheese from Switzerland. You will get a cheese from Norway, Finland, actually Finlandia, the Finnish cheese, is also made in Ohio, so you very well may be getting Swiss cheese from Ohio. I'm sure there's Swiss cheese made in Wisconsin. I mean, that's the cheese capital of the U.S., so they must make something they call Swiss cheese, because the name is seems to be unprotected, probably because it was misused for decades and decades, and so now there is a real Swiss cheese, of course. If you ask for Swiss cheese, you will get something that is an imitation of Swiss cheese. Now, when I want Swiss cheese, I want Emmentaler. So that's a problem, too. Whole Foods, where I shop very often, they have very good cheese and, you know, meat counter where they slice for you. Just a side note, for some reason, Whole Foods has not been able to get prosciutto di Parma for months now. And, in fact, I'm finding there is a shortage of prosciutto from Italy in general, because and the price is going up because of shipping things and whatever. But back to the cheese, I do believe that Boar's Head makes a genuine sliceable Switzerland Swiss. But if you ask for it at Whole Foods, they will slice you something that I must say is pretty close in flavor, but doesn't quite make it. So I question whether this was really Swiss cheese. I have a good nose for Swiss cheese, so to speak. And I examined the package, and even though it said Emmental Swiss, which is the real Swiss cheese, is Emmental Swiss, from the town of Emmental, near Bern, B-E-R-N, Bern, in Switzerland, it's made in Germany. So there you go. I mean, it was pretty close to the real deal, but at home, eating the cheese, I said, I don't think this is really Swiss cheese. And sure enough, it wasn't.
Can you tell me something?
So you can get the real deal if you are willing to, you know, in a chunk, in a block. It's always in a wheel, and it always is labeled in the wax, in the surface. It will say in large letters Emmental, and then underneath in a band it'll say Switzerland Swiss. So that's the real one. It is marked, clearly marked, and you can buy it, but you have to slice it yourself if you want a ham and Swiss sandwich, as Mr. Bob Harned often does.
Can you explain something to me?
Yeah.
I can't stand Swiss cheese cold, but you put it on a sandwich where it's melted, and I love it. I love it.
Well, it really, because cold, you're probably sensing it's waxy, but it is a great melter. And by the way, its first cousin, Gruyere, is also a great melter. Also, I should say about Swiss cheese, we used to think, oh, the more holes, the better. Well, you know, there was a period actually in history here, because the cheese is from like, I don't know, the 12th century it was being made. There was a period in its history where no holes were best, and then there was a period where there were big holes are best, and I think we're in the big hole period now, and I know they even have a sonar device to bounce sound off the cheese to make sure that it has holes. But Gruyere has tiny, they say it has holes, but it really, they're imperceptible. And I buy this really, really good, what they call cave-aged Gruyere. By the way, both Swiss cheese, the real Swiss, and Gruyere, which is made in Switzerland, Comté is extremely close in flavor, if not the same. I don't think many people could tell the difference. Is basically the French side of the Alps or the Swiss side of the Alps. But these cheeses all melt very well. And that's one reason they're very popular, and that's one reason you like them melted, because they're sort of meant to be melted. Yeah. And, you know, and the flavor comes out. So Emmentaler has a nutty flavor. And without prompting, Mr. Harned, when we finally got the real thing and put it on his ham, he said, no, this is really nutty tasting, and I didn't give him the word at all, but it is nutty tasting. And Gruyere is even nuttier. Now, these are both raw milk cheeses. So there's a big thing about raw milk cheese in the U.S. is like it's some kind of either poison or panacea. I don't know. So it's one of those things that draws very divergent opinions. But for import purposes, any raw milk cheese must be aged at least 60 days. So your everyday Emmentaler is aged 60 days. Your everyday Gruyere is usually aged 90 days. But if you can get, and a good store should know this, it's on the label, how long it's aged. It's not like they're making it up. So if you can get the older cheese, it's more a little bit more intense than the younger cheese. But they're both wonderful. On the other hand, now, fondue, the real Swiss fondue, is based on Gruyere. But I find that unless it's a very well-aged Gruyere, you may get stuck having a stringy fondue or even a separating fondue. And that's why I believe you see a lot of American recipes for Swiss fondue include a little flour. What they don't also tell you is that a very good thing for the melting of Gruyere is an acidic environment, so a more acidic white wine, one that you might not even find that pleasant to drink, but a more acidic white wine as they would use in Switzerland. Remember, Switzerland is not a wine-growing region, so the wine that they do have is, you know, it's lacking. I'll use it. That's a good generality, I think. So anyway, both of these cheeses, Gruyere and Swiss cheese, or Emmentaler, are the traditional cheeses of a cheese souffle. And I don't even know how several weeks ago I decided I had to have a souffle and realized it's relatively keto-friendly, meaning it's actually a very low carbohydrate treat, for me, a treat. It's very easy to make a souffle, however, and I'm going to get to the details in a second. But I also like a cheese souffle made with cheddar, Vermont cheddar, a really well-aged, good, sharp Vermont cheddar makes a fabulous souffle, or, you know, any number of cheeses like that, including what I bought on sale for $10 a pound. Cheese has gotten very expensive. You know that, Marshall. Do you eat cheese?
I eat cheese, and yes, I've seen that cheese has gotten very expensive. Meat has gotten very expensive, and I went out a couple of weeks ago and bought a whole bunch of meat, knowing that there was because they had that high.
Oh, because that's going to go up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Well, the cheese. When I see something that looks like it could be good, and it's only $10 a pound in the cheese department, I buy it. So I did. That was the only reason. It's cheddar from New Zealand. And I figured, oh, well, they, you know, in New Zealand they probably do know how to make cheddar. So it was a little more orange than I'm accustomed to from my Vermont white cheddar, but or even New York State white cheddar. But there used to be very good cheese in Litchfield County, too, but that just came across my mind. So I've been using this, this New Zealand cheddar that I bought on sale, and it made an unbelievably sensational, really, souffle. And I don't have any left, so I went to the market the other day. We ate the rest of it. I mean, you only need 3 ounces for my recipe, which is not that much. And the sale is over, but I got the last piece. So I am looking forward to, I can get 2 souffles out of this piece. Anyway, here's the thing about souffle. It's nothing. It's nothing but white sauce thickened with egg yolk and lightened, leavened with egg white. There are some, details here that I'm going to offer to you. But if you think about the details, you'll be fine. So my formula is, first you make a white sauce, a thick white sauce. Now, so here's what, the only carbohydrate in this whole thing is 3 tablespoons of flour. So you make a roux, meaning you melt 3 tablespoons of butter, and you then blend in 3 tablespoons of flour, and you let it bubble for, I usually figure around 2 minutes, and then add 1 cup of milk. I use straight old whole milk. I wouldn't reduce the fat too much. I wouldn't increase the fat too much. But if you're a half and half household, you could use half and half. And, make a smooth bechamel or white sauce, and beating it as it thickens, and let it simmer just for about a minute, because you're going to bake this later, and then let it cool slightly. And I season it with salt. Start out with a half teaspoon of salt, because you're going to add a lot of stuff yet. And I don't use black pepper usually. I like to use cayenne pepper, but you could use any pepper you like, but salt and pepper it. And if you use cayenne, 1/4 teaspoon is more than enough. A big pinch could be enough. Depends on your tolerance of heat. I like a little heat with my cheddar, less heat with my Gruyere. I like to put nutmeg in because I think it brings out the flavor of cheese, among other things. So I like freshly grated nutmeg. In fact, I have a collection of nutmeg graters. In fact, I only use one all the time, but I like the idea that I have like 14 of them. So, I don't know. I went tag sale crazy for a few years. Anyway, this nutmeg, salt, pepper, nutmeg, that's it. And now, after it's cooled a little bit, you're going to beat in 4 egg yolks. The egg whites you're going to save for later, and then you're going to add 1 egg white to it. So I let the white sauce cool down just enough so that it's not going to really cook the egg yolks yet. Beat in the egg yolks, and you can, and then stir in, you don't have to beat it all, stir in your cheese, which for me is 1 1/4 to 1 1/2 cups of shredded, on the coarse side of a 4-sided grater, shredded cheese, whether it be Gruyere, Switzerland Swiss, imitation Swiss, cheddar from New Zealand, from England, from sort of anywhere. Wisconsin makes very good cheddar, too. So that's it. And I like the idea of stirring the cheese in, but there are many recipes that want you to fold it in later with the egg whites, which not only requires a little bit more technique, but I think defeats my purpose of making a souffle, which is I can do it any time during the day. I can make that if I'm having it for dinner, or if I'm having it for lunch, it could do this in the morning. And then just at the last minute, you do the egg whites and fold them in and put it in the oven. This, by the way, requires a 48-ounce souffle dish, which is a standard volume for a souffle ramekin, a souffle dish. You can call it what you will, which is fairly high-sided and 7 inches or so across. Interesting, maybe not. I didn't count, but there must be at least 20 ramekins there. And starting with half cup size and going all the way up to my largest one, which is not quite big enough, really, for making this particular formula for souffle. So just to be sure that it didn't run over, which could happen, I made a aluminum foil collar. Just to say, if you don't have a souffle dish that's 48 ounces, which is, what, 1.5 quarts, you can do that. Probably you won't run over if it's just a few ounces short, as mine was. But I just bought one. I got it on Amazon Prime. It came the next day. I couldn't believe it. I didn't even have time to buy the cheese. But the souffle dish got here. So you butter your souffle dish. Takes almost a tablespoon of butter to do that. And by the way, if you make a collar, you'll have to do that too. For a nice outside crust, sprinkle the inside buttered surface of the souffle dish with grated cheese. Could be pecorino, but I always have Parmigiano in the house, not so much pecorino, so I always use Parmigiano. And that's like putting flour on the souffle dish, except it's going to make a delicious cheesy crust. That's it. When the egg whites. So I've read a lot about egg whites in the course of my life, and I actually took a home ec course, home economics course, when I was in junior high school, where they taught us how to make a meringue. And meringue has always been one of my favorite things. And since then, I guess. And I have tried cold egg whites and room temperature egg whites and in-between egg whites and beating them by hand using in a copper bowl with a pinch of cream of tartar. I've done every which way for egg whites. And now I just do the easy way out. And the easy way out is if I separate the eggs when they're cold, because they're easiest to separate when they're cold, and I put the egg yolks in my bechamel white sauce, and I just put the egg whites in a bowl in which I'm going to beat them later. And if I'm not beating them immediately, you could just leave them out on the counter covered with a piece of plastic film. Or if you feel like it's safer, you can put them in the refrigerator. The difference between beating room temperature egg whites and cold egg whites is that the end result is easier to is faster, meaning you can beat them to the desired consistency quicker if they're at room temperature, meaning 68 to 72 degrees. If they're cold, it'll take longer to get them to where you want them to be, which in this case is stiff, as we say, but not dry. And I'll tell you how that is attained. And it takes longer to get to it, but to me, it's a more stable meringue, the cold meringue, the meringue started with cold egg whites. And as I said, since I make the white sauce and blah, blah ahead of time, I'm happy to put the egg whites in the refrigerator, and then when I go to make the actual souffle, they're going to be cold. And I use a hand electric mixer. I don't do it by hand anymore. I probably should. I could use a little bit more muscle tone in my arms. So very good for that, you know? That, and I have to tell you, the other thing that's great for muscle tone is a rolling pasta in a hand-cranked machine. Anyway, back to meringue and egg whites. So I put the, I don't put anything in the bowl, just egg whites. And I start off with my handheld electric mixer going at a slow to medium speed. They call it slow, but it's really, it's faster than slow, I would say. Whatever, the slowest speed. And when the egg whites start breaking up, you can increase the speed a little bit. And then they're going to get, you're going to get some small, some bigger bubbles, and you can increase it more. And the end result should be very fine bubbles. And turn off your, and you'll see the egg whites leaving a trace as you, I rotate the bowl and the beaters at the same time. And you'll see a trace of the beaters. And when you see a nice trace of the beaters, shut it off for a second and tilt the bowl. And when the egg whites do not slide in the bowl, in fact, you could turn the bowl upside down and they won't fall out. But I'm not asking you to go that far. But if they don't slide too much in the bowl, then they're done. And you'll see, with the beaters, if you lift up the beaters, they're going to be firm peaks, but they're not going to break. Take about a third of that and fold/stir into your egg yolk thickened white sauce with cheese in it, so it's pretty thick. And you want to lighten this up a bit. About a third of the egg whites usually will do. And I don't like to strictly stir. I like to both fold and stir. And then you can fold in another third, and then you finally fold in the last third. And just to not waste another bowl to clean, I usually can fit the first third in the pan with the sauce that I've saved the sauce in. And then I can pour that onto the side of the big bowl that has the rest of the egg whites and fold them carefully together. And you should be careful because you don't want to break up too much of that air. Pour that into your prepared souffle dish. It goes into a preheated 375-degree oven for me, 40 minutes. So this is the thing. One of the reasons I remember now why this got into my head that I had to make a souffle is because I have a new oven, and I'm doing this, that, and the other thing in and on the oven just to see, you know, how it operates. Every oven has its own personality, I found in my life. And I baked my first souffle in this oven at 375, as I just said, and I took it out after 35 minutes when it looked perfect. And I thought, oh, well, it may be a little bit loose in the middle, but we like a little bit loose in the middle. It's sort of like cheese sauce. But this was a little, for me, a little too loose. For Bob, it was not a little too loose. So I gave him more of the saucy part, and I took the edge part more. But I would leave it in 5 minutes longer. It'll still be saucy in the very middle. But, you know, your oven could be different. And you don't want to let it go 40 minutes, and you don't want to let it go if the top is getting too brown. That's another thing. So don't put it on a top rack. I put mine in the middle of the oven. So there's the, and now I'm well, now that I'm into this. And, you know, I might even vary the recipe. I'm just curious with these different cheeses. I even bought, this is for another program, but I even bought a cheese that is aged down the street from me, literally. It is in a former underground, now I'm forgetting, I think it was an old subway, something or other, maintenance cave, in Crown Heights, which is literally down Eastern Parkway here in Brooklyn, off Grand Army Plaza. And it's somebody who, in French, you would call a finir. And they call it is the Crown Caves. What it is a finir is somebody who buys cheese, made cheese, from different, usually artisanal, meaning small farm producers, who may not have the facility to age their cheese, but they do have, you know, for any length of time. Just enough to transport it. So they transport it to a finisher, and the finisher puts it in his cave and finishes the cheese, meaning ages the cheese. So who knew? But Whole Foods does try to buy from local producers. And, in fact, one of the things that offended me about Whole Foods when it first opened, this is already years ago, was that you couldn't get any imported products that I buy. Everything had to be local or American or pretending to be organic. It's totally changed now. So, in any case, where was I?
Cheese.
Right. So, yeah, I'm immersed in cheese now. Cheese is a very treasured food in the world of, in the Western world, I should say, because I always, people say, oh, why do Jews like Chinese food? And my grandfather's answer, and he wasn't kosher, but he grew up kosher, his answer would be, well, they don't have cheese in Chinese restaurants.
You know, when you mentioned
because
that,
you can't mix meat and cheese, you know.
Well, when you mentioned that, I thought to myself, geez, he's right. There is no cheese in Chinese restaurants.
No, there's no. I mean, it's not a dairy cuisine. Somebody will correct me on this, I'm sure.
Well, I guess there's probably.
And
someone,
if you know differently, please tell me.
There's probably.
But
someone,
I'm thinking deep here. I don't really now. Of course, you know, modern Hong Kong cuisine, or I'm sure there are milk dishes, just like there are mayonnaise dishes. The British brought that.
Well, if you go to these Chinese buffets, they give you those frozen crab ragoons. They're filled with cream cheese.
Yeah, that, you know, but that was 1950s party food, yeah. And I always laugh when I. It's even on my Chinese takeout menu, and a place that's called Sichuan. And I thought, well, maybe crab rangoon from them is going to be different, but it isn't.
No, I still say that they don't put very much crab in there; it's all cream cheese.
Yeah, I'm not. You know, it's too much dough altogether.
Yeah.
If I want something doughy. I did want something doughy yesterday. I had to have something doughy. Carbohydrates sometimes are necessary to calm your nerves. So I had dan-dan noodles, which is a thick flour and water noodle in a chili sauce with minced pork.
Mm.
However, it wasn't good yesterday. I may have to have it again soon. Because I don't know who was cooking in the Chinese restaurant yesterday, but it wasn't the same as last week. So another thing I probably have to learn how to make myself. I'm finding more and more things I have to learn how to make myself. And I am going to take some Asian cooking lessons from a young woman who lives upstairs from me. She's from Singapore, but she's ethnically Chinese. And she cooks modern Chinese food. So I'm going to learn a few homey things and maybe a couple modern things.
All right. Well, have a good week.
On to the cheese. Yes. I'm even having cheese for breakfast.
It's grilled cheese time.
No, I'm not having grilled. I know. Those commercials make me so hungry for a grilled cheese sandwich, even if it was just on white bread.
So, all right, Arthur. Have a good week.
But I'm not doing it.
All right, have a good week.
Take care. Have a great week, everyone.
Yeah. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, you can get a hold of Arthur online, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. And on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000. HGSHomeChef.com.